Again, as we honor the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. today, the reading are his words. It's an excerpt from a speech at Western University in December of 1963. There are certain technical words within every academic discipline that soon become stereotypes and cliches. Modern psychology has a word that is probably used more than any other word in modern psychology. It is the word maladjusted. This word is the ringing cry to modern child psychology. Certainly, we all want to avoid the maladjusted life in order to have real adjustment within our personalities. We all want the well-adjusted life. But I say to you, my friends, there are certain things in our nation and in the world which I am proud to be maladjusted, and which I hope all people of goodwill will be maladjusted until the good society is realized. I say very honestly that I never intend to become adjusted to segregation and discrimination. I never intend to become adjusted to religious bigotry. I never intend to adjust myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few. I never intend to adjust myself to the madness of militarism or to self-defeating effects of physical violence. But in a day when Sputniks and explorers are dashing through outer space and guided ballistic missiles are carving highways of death through the stratosphere, no nation can win a war. It is no longer the choice between violence and nonviolence. In other words, I'm about convinced now that there is need for a new organization in our world, the International Association for the Advancement of Creative Maladjustment. Men and women who will be as maladjusted as the prophet Amos, who in the midst of the injustices of his day could cry out in words that echo across the centuries, "Let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream." As maladjusted as Abraham Lincoln, who had the vision to see that this nation would not survive half slave and half free. As maladjusted as Thomas Jefferson, who in the midst of an age amazingly adjusted to slavery, including him, would scratch across the pages of history words lifted to cosmic proportions. We know these truths to be self-evident, that all are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. As maladjusted as Jesus of Nazareth, who could say to the men and women of his day, "Love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Pray for them that despitefully use you." Through such maladjustment, I believe that we will be able to emerge from the bleak and desolate midnight of man's inhumanity to man into the bright and glittering daybreak of freedom and justice. My faith is that somehow these problems will be solved. Quotes from illustrious people about politics. In politics, absurdity is not a handicap. That was Napoleon Bonaparte. An honest man in politics shines more than he would elsewhere. Mark Twain. Also Twain, "We have the best government that money can buy." We believe that to err is human, to blame someone else is politics. Hubert Humphrey. An appeaser is one who feeds the crocodile, hoping that it will eat him last. Winston Churchill. And this from Dan Quayle. I love California. I practically grew up in Phoenix. Poor man. Humor, sweet humor, it can be a balm. It can soften the distance between people. It can bring happy moments. Just the experience of laughing with others transforms our neurology toward the positive and bonds us together. It can move us by surprise to a place other than our well-worn thought patterns. It can be universal. It can be used as well to bludgeon others. This is a sermon about creating range in your living. That is, this is a sermon about deliberately developing skills and mindsets that allow you to be more diverse and intelligent about your participation in social change. And this is a sermon also about joy. In this sermon, I honor one of the masters of creative social change, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. I assume upon reading my title, Joyous Maladaptation, someone said, "Don't comfort us too much." I think I know what he means. Many people are at risk in our country, this world right now. Some of you here, many of us not so much who are here seated. We have to be serious about this, to look the reality square in the face of their ugliness, to enable others to see as well. We don't have the time or the right to wallow around talking about and seeking comfort. May any comfort that we provide be in the service of those who are most at risk. Especially, that is a note for those of us who are more privileged and less vulnerable than others. This is not a sermon about comfort. Rather, it is about showing up in the world right now in varied, intelligent, and maladjusted ways. Creative maladjustment is what King called it. King's approach to social change was grounded in wise understanding of power and the systems of power, as well as a keen understanding of human nature and a core spiritual allegiance. He had studied and prayed about how to show up in the world given the nature of systems and power, given his faith, given his love of humanity. King knew, and he spent a good deal of his life learning this before the civil rights movement, and we've learned even more about that since he lived, that institutions, any system, tends to want to maintain the status quo. He tried to be the change that he sought. He lifted maladjustment to a fine art, reminding us that not being normal is often what the Spirit calls us to do. The time we live in is calling us forth more so than other times, perhaps, although I think I remember saying this at other times previous. And I believe that it is always so that we have to support one another and teach ourselves to be vigilant about the values and core spiritual truths that we Unitarian Universalists cherish. Why always? Because we humans are complicated and motivated by many things. I take as a spiritual icon for myself in these times, the Native American trickster coyote, creator of the world, and a signature character that showed how imperfect the world was and who was a paradoxical symbol, not a totally pure symbol, but a paradoxical symbol of this imperfect creation. Maladjustment to the status quo requires the ability to be facile, to move around and choose responses that will best achieve the change we seek. I could have called this sermon, "There Are Many Ways to Show Up," or "There Are Many Ways to March." In general, there are many healthy ways to show up in life, but particularly at this time of great division and angst in our country, we all hopefully will increase our skills to showing up in ways that will be helpful. The point is that we need to choose how we will speak, show up, march, resist, to make changes in ways that will make whatever medium we use the message itself, that does not set into motion the ethics, the behaviors that we are trying to resist. Here's a quote by Susan Kind. "Nonconformity in itself may not necessarily be good and may at times possess neither transforming or redemptive power. Nonconformity per se contains no saving value and may represent, in some circumstances, little more than a form of exhibitionism. Nonconformity is creative when it is controlled and directed by a transformed life, and is constructive when it embraces a new mental outlook." From the New Testament, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." So I wanted to consider today a few creative maladjustment people and moments recently in our history as a way to open our minds to how we might develop our repertoire of responses. There is a Parisian street artist named J.R. who created large-scale installations on the streets of Brazil's favelas. The population of Brazil's favelas is approximately 12 million, and there seems to be a never-ending cycle of poverty that exists within these slums. However, where the favela ends, you can find lavish sky-rise apartments with balconies that peer over the endless sprawl of poverty, showcasing the extreme separation of the extravagantly rich and the bitterly poor. These favelas also create a hot spot, believe it or not, for tourists who take bus tours of the favelas and observe how people in such poverty live their lives. The favelas and its inhabitants have been turned into a spectacle and one that makes some people money. To combat this, JR took pictures of the favelas' inhabitants and printed their eyes through the use of a large format printer. He then, with their help, began to secure these huge eyes of the faces of the people in the community onto the walls of their houses, turning that community from an object into an observer. Rather than objectifying the poverty of the inhabitants, JR worked with the community to give them eyes to peer back at the world. Instead of beautifying the walls of a museum, JR and the people humanized the walls of the favelas. Art as a means of forcing discussion in society, right there on the walls of society. This empowers people in an unusual way. It can jar people into an awareness of the injustice in which we are participating. It can show how we are, by being unconscious of this, greasing the wheels of inequality. Art as a way of marching. Have you heard of the Yes Men? Some of you have. I've just learned about them. I'll tell you one of the many stories of social witness that make them really interesting people. It's two people, two men. They're funny. They're creative. In 2004, the Yes Men went on a BBC's news program and impersonated one of them, a Dow Chemical spokesman. Somehow they got themselves invited. They put up a fake website saying this is who they were, a Dow Chemical spokesman, and got invited to a BBC interview. In the interview, the Yes Men announced that Dow would take full responsibility for the Bhopal disaster that occurred 20 years prior. This disaster occurred under the ownership of Union Carbide, a company that Dow Chemicals had just procured. Though the Bhopal disaster was the worst industrial disaster of the 20th century, only a meager $1,000 each had been paid to the families of those who died or were maimed. 500 died in that accident. You can watch this on YouTube. The Yes Men, under the guise of being Dow spokespeople, declared to the world on international news that Dow was going to take responsibility for the actions of Union Carbide. The Yes Men claimed that Dow was going to liquidate Union Carbide for $12 billion in order to clean up the site of the disaster, provide adequate health care for the still suffering victims, as well as look into the other hazardous materials that it was producing. Of course, none of this was true. But the media took the news and ran with it. Within 23 minutes, Dow's market valuation fell over $2 billion. More importantly, after 20 years of the world seeming to forget about one of its most horrible industrial disasters, Bhopal was once again being discussed. This is in an article called Methodologies of the Creatively Maladjusted. You may think this too much. It is important, in my opinion, to remember that sometimes too much is required. This is brave theater, to say the least. These guys are fearless and funny. This kind of showing up is grounded in an unequivocal commitment to something much larger than self. This is another way to creatively maladapt, to agitate and disrupt the usual, to reveal to the general public and to the world the systems and mechanisms of power that exist around us, as they often seem invisible, often are invisible. Now, there is an important way for us to show up right now that is not artistic or theatrical or way out there. It can be tedious, and that is to be aware of the political and legislative processes and to respond to it, because it matters, and it often slides by without enough dissenting voice in the mix. Witness the 1 a.m. healthcare vote this past week. Being more aware and responding with phone calls, letters, showing up for meetings and marches is maladjusted to life as usual. If you don't know, and we'll announce it in the next few weeks, how to join, 20 people here are developing what we're calling a witness web, and two people are taking each of 11 topics that are critical to our lives right now, things like healthcare and LGBTQ rights and racial justice and climate change, and staying abreast of what's going on both in the state and in the nation. And if you decide to join this, you can click on to any topic you wish and see if there's something going on locally or federally to which you can engage, with which you can engage, be that a meeting, an article, a letter to write, a phone call to make. For instance, two Republican senators did not vote for the health care blow-up that happened last week. And although I've forgotten their names right at the moment, I intend to call their offices and thank them for that. Participating in democracy as a process of protest. King said creative maladjustment. Creative because systems need many and varied interventions in order to change. Creative because humans are different and we each can bring different qualities to the struggle. I read, and I've read about them for years, troops of clowns whose sole intent is to, with humor and love, disrupt unjust systems. Now, I realize showing up as a clown anywhere right now can get you arrested because of whatever that was that happened a few months ago, but these people have been working and training themselves for years to show up and try to bring something different than animosity and butting heads to the table, and to critique society at the same time. I'll give you just a little example of how some of them showed up for a Nazi neo-Nazi KKK white empowerment meeting or gathering, which was outside, and they had trained themselves that whenever anybody said white power, they would say different things back, as if they weren't hearing it right. So when the Nazis shouted white power, they shouted back, white flower? The clowns yelled back, running in circles, throwing flour in the air and raising separate letters which spelled white flower. White power, the Nazis angrily shouted once more. White flowers? The clowns cheered and threw white flowers in the air and danced about merrily. White power. The Nazis tried once again in a doomed and somewhat funny attempt to clarify their message. Ooh, the clowns yelled, tight shower. And supposedly held a solar shower in the air and tried to crowd under it. I guess I'm saying today that if we want to see change, we have to somehow try and be the change in a way that will disrupt without becoming that which we are fighting against. My title today was Joyous Maladjustment. Now, by joyous, I don't mean happy. I mean the kind of joy that comes from beginning to move away from the dominant narrative that has crept away from a story with worthy soul force. That's what Gandhi called it, soul force. I mean the kind of liberation that comes when we bit by bit change the way we live because we know that we are part of something much bigger than our individual lives. I mean the kind of joyous awareness that can arise when our lives are increasingly aligned with what we know to be the best in ourselves and others. So joyous, in this context, is not happiness. And it can include despair and feeling confused and being angry and tired. Joyous is a felt sense that you are engaged in life giving, that you are engaged in a life worth living. Someone I admire, social activist and musician, Reverend Soko, wrote, "To be dignified is to find joy in the face of angst. Joy has the ability to look death in the eye and not let it have the last word." The creatively maladjusted resists the pressure to dehumanize any and all fellow humans. Creative maladjustment is a natural human response to oppression, an organic and highly adaptable way to oppose injustice. I know many of you are showing up in many different ways right now, showing up as artists, showing up singing, showing up as clowns, showing up as writers, showing up as people in political office, showing up silent, showing up as watchers of lawmaking and policymaking, showing up as the food makers, the envelope stuffers, the child caregivers, showing up as a free and responsible spiritual community that nurtures the kind of difficult joy of which I speak, showing up as marchers in the many, many marches that are now planned and happening. So I wanted to end my sermon piece today by blessing those who are going to march in the Women's March on the 21st. And I'm hoping that you'll stand if you're planning to be at the march. Is this wonderful or what? Some of you are a few of you are going to Washington, D.C. Many of you are going to the march in Boston on the 21st. If you wish to carpool with us, we're going from here at 9 a.m. on that day to a train station. So I say this for all the ways we march, but particularly you who will march this coming Saturday. May you be safe. May you be free from all harm. As the road or skies carry you toward your fellow pilgrims, may you sense the presence of those who travel with you in spirit, whose hopes and hearts are tucked into your pockets, whose names your journey's purpose makes sacred. May you encounter strangers as kind, as kindred, and may that recognition of kinship bring joy to your journey. Whether the faces in the crowd number in the dozens, hundreds, or thousands, may you not only recognize yourself, but may you also witness a dazzling tapestry of colors, languages, genders, ages, and bodies. Proud testament to the humbling display of our human family. May the crowds be gentle, friendly, and patient. If not, may the spirit of playfulness appoint you its momentary agent. May you offer quiet praise for gestures of kindness. May all bodies there, vessels of spirit and soul, be treated as the gift that they are. And may the sturdiest of marchers make space for those who need more time, more help, or a different means of moving. And amid the heady flurry of selfies and hashtags, may you remember the commitment that led you there and what will be required on the road ahead. So I just bless you for your willingness to go and hope that you will share your experience with the congregation upon your return. Go in peace and maladjusted. Sometimes mostly white congregations are called on the carpet for singing We Shall Overcome, and I know why. But I also feel that if we are all one, then the overcoming of whatever it is for all of us. So in the spirit of Dr. King, let us rise and sing hymn 169.